we left it that you had just come out of prison and on probation needed a fixed address, but obviously that became difficult. So there was a special, kind of special arrangement where you could, where you didn't need to be at that fixed address and sofa surfed for a, for a while?
Yes, so the only thing probation needs is you to have a permanent address. So we asked around some friends and I began a couple of months of, kind of a couple of weeks of sofa surfing between friends as they could have me, and then renting a few places as well.
But eventually you were, you moved a significant distance and made a brand new start. Tell us a bit about that and how that came about.
When I was in prison, my dad found out. And my dad had not been in my upbringing at all since I was 18 months old. He found out, we struck up a relationship, and he said, when you're out, come and see me. And so he lived on the Isle of Wight. I came out, and in the summer of the year I came out from prison, went to see him for a couple of weeks, and my dad said to me, what do you have at home? At this point, I had this stable, regular job and a place I'd rented, and he offered me the opportunity to start fresh where he was, because I was still living in the area, I was still in Chatham, and move down to the Isle of Wight.
Wow. So from kind of having known the inside of a cell in Colchester and then Chatham, you then made this the massive move to the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
And did that kind of present the opportunity to reinvent yourself a little bit, or?
Yes.
Okay,
it meant I could keep my past to myself, and I moved, you know, lock, stock and barrel, Billy Joe, into my dad and stepmom's house with two sisters.
And I mean, there's so many things I want to ask, but I'm kind of aware that we need to move forward in the timeline
yes.
as well. But so how did you spend your time-wise then, when kind of job-wise, life-wise on the Isle of Wight? What did you do?
It was in the country.
So you've gone from Concrete City or whatever it's called to the country?
Yes, where the best place to hang out was the park. Mm. And the pub closed in the afternoon, and it smelt funny.
I think that's called fresh air, but never mind, you know, we'll get to that.
It was starkly different
yeah.
to everything and anything I knew, and in some senses, yes, it was with my father, but he was, you know, very much a stranger, so it was new relationships, us getting to know each other, and sometimes being able to get a bus into the local town.
Mm. Once a week.
Possibly.
But you found a job on the Isle of Wight. What did you do job-wise?
Yes, where my stepmother worked, we're looking for staff, so I started working as a domestic supervisor.
Oh.
In a children's holiday campus called Kingswood on the Isle of Wight in Bembridge.
Amazing.
Yes.
And you made some significant friendships there, met some significant people. Is there anyone in particular that you'd like to say you met there?
Yeah, I met this really irritating guy and some really lovely friends.
maybe, you know, kind of fill people in, because at the moment...
The really irritating one who walked into the room and I just went, oh my goodness,
yeah,
is now my husband. Mm. And the significant friends are godparents to our children. Mm. And we've remained friends 18, 19 years now.
Amazing.
That's and I've remained with Dominic, not married all those years, but remained with Dominic those years.
But married now?
Married now.
Wonderful. That's really good. So, well done. So you guys met, you worked together, you were, I've forgotten the grand title.
Domestic
supervisor. And through getting to know Dominic, was it love at first sight? You know, he was irritating but good looking, so you went for it, or...?
He was really irritating and liked boy bands. It was love at first sight, Luke.
Boy bands. Would you like me to get you a microphone? Okay, but eventually you ended up in a relationship.
Yes, very much so.
Great.
But we were one of those because of the place we worked at, we were one of those let's keep this quiet relationships.
Okay.
So we were getting to know each other, and we'd gone from friends to being kind of a little bit more serious about things. And we're still doing all right.
You're doing great. And I'd say that through what I'm trying to get to, sorry, I feel like I'm putting words in your mouth, but through knowing Dominic and through this kind of relationship that started, you then started occasionally attending church.
I was trying to avoid that, yeah.
Okay.
No.
Well, that's obviously going well. You realise where you are right now, right?
Yes. So getting to know Dominic and be with Dominic meant that I got to know his friends. And mm-hmm. whilst we lived on the Isle of Wight, Dominic and I grew up not very far from each other, actually. Dominic grew up in Bexley, Welling. So in our growing and getting to know each other, he would come home and I would occasionally come back to meet the family and things over those first couple of years. And some of those years we had our daughter in tow as well. But it's meant that Dominic grew up in church and around Christians, and so I started going to church some Sunday mornings and things like this, and
And
it was interesting.
And you got, so obviously at some point during this timeline, you got married, and you got married, I think we've got a photo actually of, can you confirm that that's you guys?
That's us, yes.
That is very sweet, that is lovely. You got married in church.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more.
I wanted to go to a desert island somewhere, and Dominic, we got married in the church Dominic grew up in, in and around his friends, and who had were starting to become my friends. And it was really lovely. It was really nice to have some people there that I didn't know. Because apparently you can just turn up to weddings.
Absolutely. I do it all the time. If you wear a dog collar, you can turn up to even more. And so you got married then. Tell me if I'm out kind of sequence-wise, but you got married then a couple of years later, you moved back permanently from the Isle of Wight to Dominic's parents, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So we had our son. So we got married in 2005, had our son in 2007, and he was 3 months old, and we'd moved back. We had the opportunity to move back off the Isle of Wight to Welling, which was lovely, and began to settle.
And I mean, lots of things were happening obviously at that time, young children moving back to the mainland. But one of the things that that move meant that you could do was go to church more regularly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Not for me. Yes. No, it did. Significant things had happened between them, our friends and baptisms of the children, and again, Dominic's friends coming. So Christians were a pattern of friendship in my life, having met Dominic.
Yeah.
And a notion of church was a loose notion of church, but it was talked about occasionally, mostly negatively from me, because I would challenge the idea of faith and this biblical living and being nice out of a deep desire of a hurt past in those silent moments where I would look at this Bible and want this Saviour to come save me. Yeah. Suddenly the two things started to collide and come together, and I was beginning to loosely wrestle with how that rested for me.
You described somewhere as kind of your involvement in church at this time as kind of getting to know people, getting to know Dominic's friends. I think you said that you felt yourself waiting to be let down.
Yeah, because he never rescued me. He never came in the dark nights, in the tears, in the upset, in the bruises, in the sadness, in the loneliness. And here I was, regularly now in and around people who professed this kind of notion of this loving, kind, giving father. What, really? I wasn't too sure about that.
And how did that, I mean, obviously kind of church involvement and faith was important to Dominic and has remained so, was a lot more challenging for you. How did that outplay?
Through our children, because as regularly as Dominic would now go to church every week because it used to be every couple of months or so. We never went to church regularly on the Isle of Wight. And suddenly our daughter began to go every week, and messages and messaging through her far outgrew my knowledge and my understanding, because our youth worker is amazing, she's lovely. And so I began to have to begin to look for answers to help her understand these questions. And because of the nature of my upbringing, I promised when I had my children I'd give everything or go and find it out for them, to help them, to grow them, to encourage them in their questioning.
So you have this sense of you kind of, I can almost picture you going away with homework to find out various things that your daughter's asking. Also this sense of kind of preparing to be let down and a kind of getting to know people but maybe not trusting them fully.
Very, yeah.
How do all of these things sort of come together, and how does that mindset begin to change?
I think it's in relationship. When you're in relationship with Christians who are open and as honest about their weaknesses and their failures as they are in praise and promise to God, suddenly I began to see humans. I didn't just see Christians, because Christians are scary people. You know, my understanding then was they're flipping weird. They like this guy that's sat on a cloud, and it shifted in friendship and in relationship. So those once a month, every 2 month relationships become every week. I did withdraw emotionally much more, and the barrier went up very, very quickly, because that's self-protection. And the waiting to be let down was because life had told me that was my experience.
Wow.
One significant point, and that would be my daughter, is she came home one Sunday and exploring this, is this a cult, is this real, is this right, all of this mess and muddle going on. She came home with a clay pot, and it was beautiful. I've been an early years worker my entire adult life. Anything that's created by a child should never be touched by an adult, because it's perfect. That's my understanding. And this beautiful clay pot, one Sunday afternoon, we heard this horrendous racket from the playroom of come in to her screaming and shouting and tearing this clay pot apart that we were waiting for it to dry so we could paint. And she was six, and I said to her, what are you doing? She turned to me and she went, it's all right, Mummy. It's what Jesus does.
Wow. Wow.
Mummy was not all right. Do it, Nick! And suddenly, church, Christians, and things like that had been snatched totally and utterly again, and it was a cult. What are they? They're brainwashing her, and that snapped. But it snapped in the sense that it meant I went to Alpha. Because I went to prove that this lot were crazy. I went to disprove the knowledge and reality of God.
So for those, I'll ask you a lot more about Alpha in a second, but for those who don't know what the Alpha course is, just very quickly.
Yeah, so the Alpha course is a 10-week experience for you to just meet with a group of people and explore some of this understanding and knowledge around faith and what it looks like, not for a congregation of people, but for you individually. It allows you and talks you through videos and clips about really challenging things like, what is the Holy Spirit? If we pray, do they get answered? What about suffering? And it really invites the individual to look to find out what this means for them. You don't go thinking you're going to find God. You go wanting to explore questions about faith.
And you went even more than that. You went kind of wanting to disprove, or wanted
absolutely
to kind of identify these people and write them off as a cult.
Yeah.
At some point in the 10 weeks, that stopped being your goal or objective?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I did really, really well. The openness and acceptance I found within the group for some of the questions that I had from the past that I had was just amazing. This notion of belonging started to itch again and come back again. And here I was presented with a room full of 14, 15 people that I had a meal with for a number of weeks now, week six, I think this was. And I suddenly began to wonder, hang on a minute, I hadn't asked the question, what happens if this is real?
Wow.
And so I asked that question to myself.
Yeah.
And I had no answer.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say it wasn't either.
So a significant turning point in perspective.
And yeah.
And then you went from there, the Alpha course, there's kind of a weekend, or sometimes people just do it as a day, that kind of focuses on the Holy Spirit. And that was significant for
yeah.
you?
Yeah, a very, very significant day. And it was my first encounter of ministry and healing and prayer ministry, only to realise it wasn't. I had received my first encounter of that many years ago when I very first met Dominic and went to a wedding. Mm. And we went to a church the following Sunday. Mm. And then I was just blown away by this presence of, it's all right, it's okay. I didn't need to worry, fight, be angry, be anxious. I didn't have to be anything other than just sit here and cry. Mm. And boy, did I cry. Mm. Mm.
So in terms, I'm very conscious that I don't want to put words and phrases in your mouth. Would you describe yourself as having become a Christian during the Alpha course, or was that a process that followed, or...
No, I very much became a Christian through Alpha, in the sense that I just remember getting it. And when people say it's like light bulb moments and things like this, it wasn't that for me. It just fitted. Mm. And suddenly the world began to look different in a really positive way. And I just got it.
And what was the process? And I guess in some ways this is an ongoing, lifelong process.
Yeah.
But the process of reconciling some of those questions that you had about God, sat down as an 11-year-old reading that Bible saying, why aren't you saving me, to coming to be able to say, I believe that this God is real and is who the Bible tells us he is.
Yeah.
How did those two things come together?
It's a journey, isn't it? You know, that didn't all just happen in that moment. He took me to that moment and led me in that moment and moved me on. Mm. So from Alpha, we went to house group and I began to continue to learn. I was hungry. I suddenly knew God and I wanted everything. You know, I wanted to know everything. Mm. I wanted to experience this change and this power and this fulfillment all the time. And when you make a new friend and you really, really like them, you make a date to go on coffee. Well, I made dates to pray and be with God and worship with him and just immerse myself in everything he was. Because, hey, I'd been missing it for 28 flipping years. Mm. I wanted my 28 years worth.
Mm. That's amazing. And I guess that leads to my next question, really. So this was kind of just over 10 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Your then experience of Christian life and moving into ministry or serving within the church has kind of been accelerated.
Yeah.
Maybe because you were trying to make up for lost time. But tell us what that's been like. How did you get increasingly involved in church life and service?
We'll do a whistle-stop tour, I
Go
promise.
For it.
So those early Alpha days, house group came. We did significant Bible studies, John Ortberg, Stepping Out of the Boat, what that looks like for you. And I began to think, hey, what does it look like to share this with people? Should I even share it? Are we allowed to share this with people? You know, and then knew, obviously, we are to share this with people. But in 2008, I became a Christian, and I was a Christian. And in May of 2009, I entered into a time of my life that I will never, ever, ever change. If, you know, they say if there's a moment you can go back and change, this would never be one of them. I had life-saving surgery out of an accident with a dentist, and I was in intensive care for 5 days, in hospital for 10, and through that time, please, if you go away and listen to any part of this evening, this is the bit you listen to. Jesus Christ is real. His presence, his power, his everything, his moment, all that 5 days was the only person I had to encounter with, I had to converse with. I was really, really unwell, but I wasn't unwell enough to know that my Lord, my Saviour was with me those 5 days, and I've experienced a glimpse of the glory to come.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And that experience followed, again, don't want to kind of linger in too much detail, but followed almost this alpha experience and you saying, you know, God, this is great. I think I get
Use
it.
Me.
But and I'd love some kind of almost confirmation or whatever. Yeah. Then there's this time in intensive care and this knowledge of the presence of Christ with you.
Oh, it was like we're talking now. It was just an exchange of, oh, but I've this. It's all right, B. I know.
That's amazing.
But what... It's all right, B.
That's amazing.
I know. Well, am I coming with you now? Do you want to come with me? And my heart broke because I saw a picture of my husband and my children. And suddenly, a question I'd never really asked myself is, I get to go with you. If this is the moment, I get to go with you. But I leave them behind. And my heart broke. And that was the moment in intensive care. I definitely know. I found my fight. And I fought again. I fought to come home. And I fought. And I continue to fight every single day. Because he's given me the best gift ever. He gave me back my life. And I will serve him in that.
That's amazing.
If it's on white chairs in front of you guys doing crazy stuff like this, I will serve him of my life.
When you commit to serving Christ, you don't know where it's going to lead you, do you?
No.
And so that's led you to kind of one of the ways that you've served is through through kind of doing some training with the diocese,
yeah.
Which has led you to working for a charity called Home for Good.
Yes.
Can you very quickly tell us a little bit about Home for Good and what you do for them?
So Home for Good are a Christian organisation, and we've got partnership with the bishop, and we're looking to find foster carers and adopters throughout the diocese and Kent, first and foremost. But secondly, we're here to support churches in doing that and support churches to support foster carers and adopters as well. Okay. We're a young organisation, a charity, but we are growing very, very quickly, and our founder himself is a foster care adopter, and if you want to know any more about that work, then please, you know, feel free to talk to me. My details are on the back. We'll have coffee together.
Absolutely, and Home for Good and Billy Joe.
I know the vision. Vision is it. You know.
But you run some fantastic kind of specific evenings about finding out about fostering and adoption.
Yeah,
and
information evenings.
As someone who's been to one of those, I can fully recommend that in whatever way you want to be supportive of whether you want to foster or adopt, or whether you want to know how you can support those who are doing that more effectively, go to one of these evenings and we'll make sure that here we're publicising them increasingly effectively. But time is, we've got like 5 minutes, so let's go. There's a sense that in all of this, you know, you were in care yourself. There were times looking back in your life when you feel like more intervention kind would have been helpful. And now you're working in care. There's one story. I promised that we'd go back and look at a photo. I wonder if the photo that we saw earlier, there's a sense that your life is coming full circle in the things that you're doing. Tell us a bit about this photo, and then we've got another photo that comes after it and why they're significant.
So five weeks ago, I was at a meeting for Home for Good, and I shared, and afterwards an incumbent come up and said, was church anywhere in your past? And I've already said Peggy scooped us up, explained this to him, and he said, oh, that church, yeah, it's just round the corner. I was like, oh, brilliant. What's it called? Chatham Evangelical Free. Well, oh, and my face said it all, and he said, does that mean anything? I'm an evangelist in an evangelical church. I think it might mean something. Mm. Then 2 weeks after that, we had a meeting at Pip and Jim's. We did a service, a Sunday morning service. I was interviewed as a looked after experienced adult, and a lady was interviewed before me. She came over to me at the end, and she asked me two questions. Did you live on Melville Court? Yes, I did. Did you have a younger sister? And she named her. Yes, I do. It turns out I met Tandy, who was my flexi carer. And this is the photo that has recently come into my... This is Tandy.
So Tandy and you, X years later.
36 years ago, Tandy was my foster care, my flexi carer, with me and my sister. And that the photo before was a photograph she showed me 2 weeks ago over a cup of tea as we now begin to rebuild. And importantly, Luke, I think scripturally, Psalm 139, verse 7, where can I hide from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? Shows here that the Lord has been interested and involved from day one in all the chaos and all the mess and all what's happened. And I'm now being restored.
That's amazing. I love the attention to detail when God works in a life.
Oh, yes.
It's incredible. Very quickly, you've mentioned family a lot. I think we've got a picture of family up because... do you want to quickly tell us who these lovely people are?
You've got my son, myself, my husband Dominic, and our daughter Charlotte. Our son's 11 and our daughter's 16. Mm. And they are in ministry themselves, they're musical in the house. And my husband's a drummer. And that's us on the Isle of Wight in the summer.
So they're musical and your husband's a drummer?
Yes. Sorry, no. I didn't say that.
That is exactly what you said.
That wasn't me.
Amazing. And Dominic, it's been wonderful that you've been able to join us and heckle from the front row as well tonight. Just kind of two questions in one to close. Firstly, having experienced a significant amount of life outside of the walls of the church, but obviously with God weaving his strands of grace in your life, what would your message be to the church, kind of from someone who was once an outsider looking in? And then equally, what would your message be to people who find themselves in the position that you were in for a while, kind of a sort of an observer, someone who was kind of cynically on the sideline, occasionally coming along?
Okay, what would I say to the church? Do what you speak. Mm. You know, God asks us to love unconditionally. Do it. Mm. Because there are cynical outsiders like myself. I was at 28, just waiting to be loved, to belong, to be cared for in a really radical way. And we've got the person to do that for us, with us, through us. He could do it by himself. But sorry, church, he's chosen to do it through you and through us. Be bold.
Yeah, That's great. And to you at 28, what would you say?
Yeah, I just come on, B, sort it out, give up and let God go.
So there's something of kind of surrender, and I think that
what you mentioned
in that kind of whole transition of the Alpha Course and that mindset, kind of saying, actually, what if this is true, is significant, I guess.
Absolutely, and explore that. What if this is true? Well, it is. I know it is, and I have shared with you already a glimpse of what is to come. And I'm excited for my next bit and what is to come. But between here and there, every breath is to serve him.
That's amazing. Just want to encourage you, Billy Joe is going to stick around a little bit. If you'd like to hear about Home for Good, and I know that some people are here specifically because they'd like to find out a little bit more about, you know, that part of your life and ministry, please do chat to Billy Joe at the stand at the back. We as a church will be running an Alpha course again or something similar in the near future. So if you're here tonight and you're thinking, wow, I'm in that place and I really need to go somewhere where I can ask these questions, please do come and speak to me, and we'd just love to register your interest, and so that as soon as we know the dates of it starting, we can let you know when it's going to happen. But Billy Joe, it's been such a privilege to have you with us. Thank you for sharing your incredible story, and we're aware that it's a story that's still being written.
It is.
But thank you for your vulnerability and your openness and your honesty. I wonder if we could show our appreciation for Willie Bennett.
Thank you.
Finally, just to say, the next Sunday conversation is on the 17th of March, and we have Anita, who is part of our congregation here, is going to be sharing something of your life story, someone who came to faith through someone in church doing what they said, through sharing their faith, and someone who hasn't looked back in their journey of faith with Jesus, and who's the love of Jesus makes a significant impact day to day. So we're looking forward to hearing that story. Do join us on the 17th of March, same time, 6:30. And do pick up either the conversations with Billy Joe or myself. Thank you so much for coming. God bless.